then move to agenda item 6, which is our low threat and general discharge cases. Mr. Roberts.
First, I'd like to say thank you to Christina Seeley, Tom Kuchel, Cecile DiMartini, Sorrel Marks, Sheila Soderberg, Mike Higgins, Peter Von Langen, Katie DeSimone, Harvey Packard, and others who worked on those items. That was a huge uncontested group right there, may have been a record. And a lot of work went into that, and I may have left out some names. I had to write those down. I could not remember all those names. So thank you. Moving on to item 6 and the low threat and general discharges. For the benefit of the new board members and for some of the more seasoned veterans too, I'd like to point out that this next compilation of items is a huge time saver for us. These are general items. By using these vehicles, we don't issue individual WDR waste discharge requirements or MPDS permits to these facilities. It saves the applicants a lot of time and money, and it saves us a lot of resources as well. And so these are very important vehicles. Two of those just got reapproved just a minute ago. And so with no further ado, I'll talk about the specifics. On October 4th, staff enrolled the Vines RV Resort under the statewide general waste discharge requirements for small domestic wastewater systems. On September 14th, staff enrolled the La Panza Ranch Olive Mill, that's a fruit and vegetable processor, actually an olive processor, under the general waste discharge requirements for fruit and vegetable processing waste. Staff enrolled the four wineries, Mardian Winery, LaBarge Winery, Emma Lilly Vineyards, and Michael Rose Cellars under the small winery waiver, which is coupled with the general waste discharge requirements for winery waste. And I note that the waiver has a production limit of 10,000 cases. That's the cap on the waiver. And staff enrolled the five sites under the general waiver of waste discharge requirements. Three of these sites, I believe, are underground tank sites by our soon-to-be-retired John Mijares. And
I do have a question on two of those. Do you want to finish your list? And
sure.
Then
I'll finish, and then let's come back to that. The second to the last item, the Whitaker Ordinance, is also associated with the site we spoke of that we just adopted waste discharge requirements for. This is a enrollment in the highly treated groundwater to land, or this is a discharge of highly treated groundwater to land at the Whitaker site. And the last enrollment, the Space Launch Complex of Vandenberg Air Force Base, covers reuse of water from a launch facility at the base, and this water is analyzed prior to reuse. And I'd be happy to field any questions on that or have staff.
Thank you. The first one I have a question on is the Chevron service station in Hollister, and I note that an injection well is to be installed. And then it refers to a single proposed event during which time the injection well, it wasn't clear. What is that reference to, a single proposed event? Is there a one-time injection of the sodium persulfate solution? Is that what we're talking about, is a one-time event?
We got John Mijares coming to the microphone.
John, you're still
at least
here.
One more time.
this site has been cleaned up for a couple of years now using the soil vapor extraction system. There's one area where the former tank was located with still elevated concentrations of hydrocarbons. So they're planning to do this one-time injection to oxidize the petroleum hydrocarbons at that particular area.
Okay. And then will there be any post-event monitoring to certify that that was a successful treatment?
Yes. They have downgradient monitoring wells to verify whether the hydrocarbons are declining or has been eliminated.
And what's the level of those downgradient wells at this time? They meet the standard that we're looking for, or where are those wells?
Correct. The downgradient wells are already in compliance with our cleanup levels. Okay. So there's just this area that's still elevated in concentrations that we want to clean up.
Okay. So once that injection occurs, if it fails, what would you expect to see in the downgradient well monitoring data? What would it show you? Would it spike, or what would happen?
Well, most likely it will continue to degrade, because as it is right now, there's no additional treatment, and they are already in compliance. So it's just there for monitoring that this injection might cause the movement of contaminants. It will be monitored.
Okay, I understand better now. Thank you. Then, if I could, the second question I have regards the Union Tow Service in San Juan Bautista. And I just wondered if we could have a little...
John's too.
Is that John?
We're not going to let you go down.
I'm not talking fast enough, John. I could have saved you all those steps. I just wanted to know a little bit more about the pilot study, and what will you be looking for from that pilot study that they're proposing?
The pilot study, again, will verify whether the addition of this... it's the magnesium sulfate that will be added. Mm-hmm. And the purpose of that, again, is to aid in the anaerobic biodegradation of petroleum hydrocarbons.
So the scale of the pilot study is going to be designed to look at a specific point where these contaminants occur, and it will occur at a scale that you can see some effect. Or, well, how is the pilot study designed, in other words, so that we can then project that this is the right method for cleanup for this site?
The selected pilot study area is where the highest concentrations are right now. Mm-hmm. So in this area, they're going to install a couple of injection wells, one to hit the upper saturated zone, and another to target the lower saturated zone.
Okay.
And this injection of the chemicals will be monitored whether it's successful or not. And when you have the desired effect, then it will be implemented site-wide.
Yeah. Okay. So your work, then, regional staff without you will be involved in the review, and is there another approval before they move to full scale treatment?
That's correct.
Okay. And what's the time frame for all of that? Do you know?
Well, they're supposed to get started as soon as they receive our approval. Okay. And so we have not received the the update on that. We will be receiving the reports in December, on December 30th.
Oh, upcoming?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. That's pretty short term. Okay. Thank you. That answers my question.
John, I had a question before you leave about the two sites that Dr. Hunter just asked you about. One is using a oxidative method, and one is using an anaerobic method.
Mm-hmm.
And why is that?
Well, under the in situ chemical oxidation, you can have a choice of chemicals. And that depends on the concentrations, depends on the lithology at the site, and the experience also of the consultants working on that particular site. So in this Chevron station, for example, they're using sodium persulfate because based on the concentrations and the extent of contamination, defined that that will be the most effective method of or chemical to use. And with respect to the 101 albida, they have actually conducted several other study using other chemicals, hydrogen peroxide, for example, and they found that it's not working very well. So they're going to try this other chemical.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
But I have one more question on the same site, which is the former B&K Union Tow Service facility. You know, this being a pilot project with the magnesium sulfate injection, I think the answer you gave, Monica, helped me get a background overview of the technology. But my question is this, are we on a leading edge of the technology, or are we on the bleeding edge of the technology on applying it on these remedial measures? These type of project is characterized as being a pilot project, so I wasn't too clear if it was pilot for that specific site. We see how well the conditions, the soil conditions, et cetera, are going to allow this technology to be used, or are we using this technology as a relatively new leading edge technology for site remediation?
It is a pilot for this particular site, but the consultant has used this particular technology in other sites.
Successfully?
They are still doing it. So, by successfully, meaning we close the site, right? It could take years before you can actually close the site by applying this, because you have to apply it, you have to monitor it. So, we can, I can, what do you call this, request the consultant to provide that information if that's important to you.
Well, you know, the reason I asked that is because I think a lot of these cleanups, you know, you learn by doing. And so if there is a methods like these which shows to be very successful, then when we review other projects, you know, we can basically take shorter cuts saying, hey, this has worked very, very well, and let's spread the, you know, the wealth of information to other sites. So I'm looking at this more as a, you know, lessons learned and how this can be promoted elsewhere.
That's why we have this pilot study for this particular site.
Okay. All right. Then my second and last question is on the Whitaker facility. We're talking about the difficulty and the challenges with selenium treatment, and we're referring to about 30 gallons of minutes potentially to be discharged in an adjacent property. So my question is in two part. What is the adjacent property? And how many acres are we talking about since we're referring to discharging potentially water that is contaminated with selenium, you know, as a surface water treatment? And as we know, selenium, you know, certainly has a toxicity threshold, particularly for agriculture used, for example. So if you could expand on that a little bit.
So I'm going to introduce to you Christina Seeley. She's the project manager for our staff.
Thank you.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm Christina. I work on the site cleanup unit. And for this small discharge that we're talking about that's enrolled in the waiver, there's no selenium present. There are 6 wells on the site that extract groundwater, but the 1 or 2 wells that they're going to be extracting from during this startup phase don't have selenium in them because they're in a shallower aquifer unit. So there won't be selenium in this small discharge that's to a neighboring property. The discharge area is probably about 1 acre, and it's just a field next door, a farmer, and he needs to water some grass for his horses. So it's a very low threat discharge, and that's why we're enrolling it in this smaller general waiver. The bigger order is concerning the selenium. There's no selenium in this.
And, you know, the reason I asked that is because it says, however, if the discharge does not meet surface water requirements for selenium, a technically challenging compound, Whitaker will discharge the treated water in the neighboring property. So maybe I misinterpreted this,
yeah.
But I read it as, okay, if it doesn't meet quality standard, we will discharge it on the adjacent property. And maybe this is my Frenchism that got in my way here.
And there's been some data that's been collected already. So some of this has changed since I wrote this waiver. So they initially thought that there could be some selenium when they started pumping the wells during startup. And during startup is when they're having these very low flows and they're testing this new system. So during startup, they started pumping 1 or 2 wells, but those wells, they haven't found very high concentrations of selenium, and so they are able to discharge it to the neighbors. If they did find selenium, they can shut off the system immediately, and they take weekly samples, if not more. So they're doing a lot of samples of the actual treatment system. So they can shut the system and run it in recycle mode, and then they can store the water in Baker tanks on the property before they discharge it. So we're not, if,
I guess. Explain the difference between a surface water effluent and a discharged groundwater. Different limits.
So the limits that are required when you discharge to surface water are quite low. They're 5 parts per billion. And those numbers are protective of aquatic species. So when selenium goes to surface water, it's very important that it's, you know, highly treated and at this low number. So Whitaker's had a lot of difficulties meeting that number for the surface water discharge. So what they're doing right now is starting the system up and discharging to groundwater under this waiver. And when you discharge to groundwater, the effluent limits are not as stringent because there's no aquatic species present. So they can actually discharge to groundwater, surface water, up to a much higher number, and which is the lowest water quality objective for groundwater, which is 20 in this area for irrigation supply. So there's actually a difference depending on where they discharge on how strict the cleanup needs to be, and that's why we've created all these different permits. So if they can't reach the selenium discharge to the river, then they can have other alternatives. But so far, they haven't actually had high selenium because they're not pumping from the wells that have high selenium. Sorry, it's lots of permits.
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I just add one follow-up question?
Sure.
And I think I'm also glad that we have lots of time today, so I'm probing things that normally I might not ask for more information in this context. What happens to the selenium when it is discharged or injected into groundwater? How does that work in the as far as degrading the
for
selenium?
For surface water or?
Into groundwater or to the groundwater basin.
Okay, so for the waiver that we're speaking about, it discharges straight to surface and irrigation, and there's some assimilative capacity of the soil. It will absorb some, and it will remain in soil. But when they do discharge into the aquifer unit, a reinjection well in the future, which is potential as part of the order that we approved in item 7, that you approved in item 7, that will end up in groundwater. There will be a small area that will have higher selenium concentrations, and it will generally dissolve as it moves out from where they're discharging. So it could remain there, but it will dilute and dissolve over time.
Okay, and so the monitoring will capture those changes, and we'll be able to see fairly specific areas.
And they did a big modeling effort when they first applied for the order to look at how groundwater would accept selenium, where it would end up, and then they prepared a monitoring plan based on that.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Okay. Any other board questions for any of the items within agenda item 6? Okay. Thank you very much, staff. Mr. Robertson, why don't we move to item number 9.